If you have an interest in horses and love learning more about horses, the horse industry, teaching, or even managing your own horse business, then you're in the right place. We would love you to join us on our mission, which is to improve the lives of horses around the world through the education of riders, handlers, and trainers. So get comfortable, listen in, and enjoy.
So Leticia, before I welcome you to Horse Chats, I'd just like to remind our listeners that if you've got a vision, the same as International Horse College, which is to have a world where people safely appreciate, respect and enjoy their horses, and the horses appreciate, respect and enjoy their people. So if you've got that sort of a vision, have a look at the internationalhorsecollege.com website, registered training organisation 31352. Now, welcome, Leticia. So, Leticia, first of all, I'd like to know a little bit about Contour, sadly, but tell us a little bit about you. So, obviously, you've been involved with horses for a long time. Tell me a little bit about when you first got involved and when you first got interested in saddlery and the fitting of saddle and the importance of having a correct fitting saddle for a horse.
Right. Well, let's see, to shorten the story, when did I get interested in horses? I was 3 years old and went to the library and got the Walter Farley's The Black Stallion book. I'm in third grade, not 3 years old. Went with my grandmother, got the book, fell in love with horses deep in the heart at that time, third grade. Fast forward to my 47th year of life, and I looked at my husband and said, if I don't have a horse before I die, I think I'll die. And I got the first horse of my life, which was given to me by a friend. It was a 2-year-old Pasofino stallion, not the wisest introduction to horse ownership. But a couple of years later, and my husband got a horse the next year, and it became a new chapter of our lives. We were retired at the time, and we met Pat and Linda Pirelli over in Europe. And the four of us just hit it off, and they weren't married yet. And Pat said, boy, I really would like the woman I love to fall in love with your corner of Colorado, which is southwest corner, Durango, Colorado. Yep. Because I think it's the most beautiful spot on earth, and we want to build an education center there. But we don't know where to start. So we invited them to stay in our home and gave them our little Jeep to run around and find some real estate that they could afford. And when they saw us interacting with our horses, now by then we'd owned our horses for 2 years, and they would very politely offer a suggestion if they thought we were going to die, but they would not. They were very, very polite. And we just all loved each other and laughed and cooked and watched movies and whatnot. But they would offer a suggestion if they saw us doing something really dangerous. It's so funny to look back on it. And shortly thereafter, we realized the power of their message that went way beyond horsemanship, that looking at things from the other creature's point of view, and all that goes with the very best of the Pirelli program that they developed. And I remember saying to my husband, I would do anything to help these people be successful. I wish I'd thought of these principles and practices when trying to raise our children. Anyway, at some point, Pat said, let's do something in business together. And we created the Pirelli collection, and I started designing clothing and this, that, and the other, that people who followed their horsemanship training could enjoy feeling like they belonged. And at one point in the year 2000, Linda Pirelli said, my gosh, saddles are torture devices. And I had the typical reaction. I said, well, luckily not mine, because I've had a very expensive custom saddle made for my little horse, and we knew all the best leather makers and whatnot, and I won't bore you with all those details, but I was absolutely proud that I'd done the best I could as a horse owner for my little guy. I had him measured by the best tree makers, hauled them over 3 mountain passes to get to the very knowledgeable in their field. And after she said that, it stuck in my brain, and I watched my horse just carrying the saddle. I wasn't even in there, and I could see he could not move as nature intended at all. He didn't look as fluid and rhythmic as he did in the pasture, and I just thought, what's up? Same with my husband's horse. We had these saddles made. So it just piqued my curiosity, and because we had this Pirelli collection that was supposed to be this fun thing that suddenly was growing into quite the huge business, I just said, Linda, I think it would be great, since you have about 100 people studying on campus by now all the time, with every breed imaginable and riders of every level of ability, I'll go find saddles and equipment and bring them, and you can test it and figure out what would be the best to recommend, and we'll put it in the Pirelli collection.
Yeah.
Well, we couldn't find any, and I was becoming a good student, an observer of horse biomechanics, everything from the expression on the face to the quality of stride to the rhythm and softness or rigidity, all the things you notice when you realize a horse is not traveling as nature intended. And we couldn't find saddles. We tried treeless saddles, thinking that sounds like such a good idea to offer the freedom to the moving body. But they don't work. I mean, you probably know that. A treeless saddle doesn't have the weight distribution and support. So then we started working with saddle makers. And again, we had access to the most talented in the industry. And over the course of 3.5, by then I was so self-righteous, I wouldn't put my saddle on my horse at all. I rode him bareback up and down the Rocky Mountains for hours at a time, gradually caving in his back, of course. But still, I'm not going to put that saddle, that torture device, on him again. 3.5 years later, 8 prototypes later, watching horses, trying, rebuilding, learning to tune out the humans, including the saddle makers who had their, let me show you how I do it attitude, when the horse was obviously still not happy. So finally we get a broad horse hugging, body hugging kind of shape that was more U-shaped and flat than what a typical saddle maker makes for a horse. And it was essentially 10 degrees wider than full quarter horse bars. And if you know about saddles, full quarter horse bars are considered a wide, generous saddle. Well, horses told us that wasn't wide enough and it wasn't really flat enough. So when we finally got the horses happy, Linda said, I think we don't have the balance point quite right yet for the rider. So we went one more prototype. And then when it arrived, it was on a Friday of a big event, I remember. And we threw it on a barrel, sat in it. Linda said, you know what? I think this will do. And I've got a makeover, a behavior makeover to do in front of the crowd of a couple of thousand people this afternoon. And I think this horse has a saddle problem. So she went out on the limb. And indeed, the horse was struggling. And it was observed as a behavior problem by most. And Linda said, let's just change the saddle and put our new prototype on. And the horse completely settled immediately. It was one of those. Because, of course, they're somatic creatures. And when they're trapped in a device that makes them feel unsafe, what are they going to do? They're going to try to save their lives in one way or another. Or they settle into learned helplessness and just carry you through it. But they're far from excited to have you as a partner, right? And we were all focused on wanting to be one with our animals and seeking harmony and wanting to believe that our horses enjoyed seeing us come around the corner. Well, they might, but when you put a trapping device on them, it's not good. Anyway, it was a beautiful demonstration. People came running into our booth saying, where can we buy one of these saddles? Well, all we had was the prototype. And we had to find the saddle maker who would make them in multiple, because the guy who made the prototype clearly said he wouldn't. So we had the one, and it was quite the hunt. And we found a saddle maker in Texas who was willing to work with us and do things not traditionally, which slowed him down, so they were more expensive. But we sold about 1,500, 2,000 of them quite quickly. And then we discovered this malleable substance that if we could build a mold in our shape to which we evolved with all these, if we could build a mold in that shape and pour the foundation for the bars and the ground seat and then put different forks and cantles on that are made of wood and fiberglass covered, so that the forks and cantles and the angle and attitude of the bars would hold the malleable substance just right, you'd have a flexible enough ground seat with this welcoming shape, and you could put anything on top if you wanted. You could make a roper saddle or a more of a laid-back recreational saddle. And now we make, my gosh, over 20 different kinds of sports-specific or recreation saddles with this shape. And that shape essentially is 10 degrees wider than full quarter horse bars. But Pat came riding toward me one day on a really broad mare, and he'd been riding her in this saddle for the better part of a year, and she had grown much more because, of course, she could spread out. And so her chest was wider. I remember saying, she looks like tabbouleh salad that always seems to grow in the bowl. How much you eat it, there's more of it. And I said, do you think we ought to try a super wide saddle? Let's go 20 degrees wider and see what happens. Yeah. We didn't know if a rider would put a foot in and then the saddle, you know, would roll off the horse. So we really didn't know. But in fact, the opposite is true. It actually hugs the horse so well, whereas a saddle that's too narrow is, I always say, it's like a birdhouse roof on a beach ball, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be more tippy, plus it's restrictive. So now we have the saddle shape, but we realize really no matter how wide you make the saddle, and it's not a matter of just setting the 2x4s wide apart, you know, wide saddles are not necessarily what we have, because there's a sculpting of the angle and attitude of the bars all the way along that we had to do to get it to perform the way we wanted. You can't just take the two bars and move them wider apart. It's the angle and attitude that makes it function with the horse's body. And each horse's body is going to intersect it at a different place up that curve. So the measuring between the bars doesn't give you the information you need. But we realized we needed to handle the space between the horse's body and the underside of the saddle. We call it the interface. Mm-hmm. And that needed to be customizable in a way. Needed to preserve room for the shoulder range of motion to let those shoulder muscles bulge as the scapula swings back. And the muscles are not just on the top of the scapula. They're on the underside, too, that enable the thoracic sling to expand and lift and the back to flatten. The abdominal muscles push up into all that room, and it totally changes the horse's opportunity to move. We knew we needed shims. People think of shims as a bad thing. And we knew we needed to have something that would prop that saddle up and keep that room there. At first, we did it wrong, just the way so many people still use shims today. They'll put them too far forward. You find these shim pads, you know, with the seams in them. Yes. They have a pocket. And I always say to people, if you've got one of those pads, I'm not going to tell you to throw it away, but rip the seams out, because you really need a tapered foam. We call our pad and shim line, our interface line, VersaFit now, because with our tapered foam shims in the two different thicknesses of three different shapes, you can fit every horse in the barn for the rest of its life. In stages of training, you might use the thin one at certain times of the year or in a thicker one.
Yeah, you've got the versatility to change because the shapes change.
And you need to know where that scapula bone is. We've now got kind of a marker. There's the bone, and where your fingertips curl over that bone tells you where to place your saddle. If it's an English saddle, you put it behind there. If it's a Western saddle, it'll flare out a bit, but you can look at that front concho, and the front third of the concho should be where your fingertips curl over that bone. But then you lift leg, and the scapula swings back, and there's a bulge of muscle here.
And that's so important, isn't it? Just to lift the leg to check.
Exactly. You want the lifting power of a shim behind that bulge, and then that bulge can happen. Otherwise, it's pinched. So call it the 4B formula, the bone, the bulge, behind the bulge, and then you stand back and look at the balance of the seat. Most saddle fitters so often start with the balance of the seat. They say to set your saddle up for perfect balance, and they don't even think about the horse.
No. The way you explained it, you know, you went right through and explained it in a lot of detail. One thing I didn't do, Letitia, and I normally sort of, because I was flipping a bit of paper, I didn't ask you, and this is something I normally ask people straight off, is do you have a favourite saying? Do you have something that you say all the time that you think, yes, this is my favourite saying or your favourite quote or something, and how it's helped you develop in your life and your horses and your,
I probably have several. I found one of my old high school yearbooks a number of years ago, and I didn't even remember that the yearbook staff had written under my picture. You know, do you remember in your yearbook, did you have a quote everybody. Well, someone else picked the quote for me, but it really did fit me. And that is, either I will find a way or I will make one.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what you're doing there. Yeah.
That's exactly what I think I've always done. I've had really a fascinating life and done some fascinating things. And I just have always tended to hold my nose and jump in the deep end of the pool and start swimming. I just, if it's something I passionately want to do, I will find a way to do it.
Yeah, Leticia, because you said you were retired, but what did you do before that in your early life?
I've done a number of things. I've had my own business, and I had a number of clients for whom I provided design, public relations, marketing things. One of my most time-consuming client was a big-name entertainment facility, so that led to booking and promoting entertainers into a showroom, a 410-seat showroom with 250 dining seats downstairs, two shows a night. They hired me because they'd been failing as a jazz club. It was Denver, Colorado in 1971 or 72. And so I said, you need to book something more than jazz in Denver, Colorado. Two shows a night, six nights a week, 52 nights a year. And so we started to identify who could fill that showroom but isn't too big a star to overfill the hall. And that was a lot of pumping up a leaky tire every week, but working with fascinating people.
I'm just thinking, you know, because you started this line, you know, this accessory line to bring through. And I just thought, what skills have you brought across from there? You know, just straight up, your organization skills, your project management skills, those sorts of things you would have brought.
I would like to tell you they're better than they are, Glennis. I've been a doer and a creator more than a manager and an organizer. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. I was the artist for my university while going through building a portfolio that could sell my skills. And I am a director of advertising and promotion for the CBS television affiliate in Denver for McGraw-Hill Broadcasting. But I didn't learn enough about project management skills until someone I hired kind of beat me over the head about the necessity for such things. So I admire you for identifying how important that is to make a business successful. Definitely. Because without it, you don't have the structure. Being a good manager doesn't come automatically. I can't tell you that I'm a good manager today. I have a wonderful team. Ryan Fouts is the head of it. And we work at communicating well. And I work at staying out of the way so that my team can function and create the structure that is not my strong suit to set up.
I talk to a lot of people about careers in the horse industry, you know, and my big thing is that people laugh about careers in the horse industry. Oh, yeah, great to have a hobby. You can't make any money out of it, right? Well, I'm sure if you told that to Pat and Linda Pirelli, you know, that you can't make any money out of horses, they'd laugh because you can. It is a career, but you can't just go and patch a horse all the time and ride your horses. You know, like, that's not the career. You've got to bring in all these other skills that help you work within the horse industry. And within the horse industry, then you get to work with some great people who are really passionate about their horses. But there's all these other skills that need to come in. It's not just about, you know, just time management. Like, you can't spend all day just riding your own horse. You've got to be able to say, right, well, this is how long this should take. This is how long this should take. And this is how long this should take. And, you know, whether you bring in other people or do it yourself, there's a lot of skills involved in a career in the horse industry, particularly if you plan to make it a career and or make it a profitable business. And, you know, I think these skills are so important to learn. Yeah.
They are. And getting back to looking at things from the horse's point of view, the needs of a dependency of the horse is beyond proportion. I remember that first thought when I had my first little two-year-old horsey on the end of a string, and the woman, the breeder who gave him to me, said, oh, don't ride him till he's four. And I thought, well, I'm a pretty good dog trainer. I can handle this. A horse is a totally different kettle of fish in terms of its needs and the language with which you need to communicate with it to help it feel safe and tractable and certainly to enjoy It's time.
But the thing that I like that you brought in the first place is the empathy. You know, you've got the empathy for the horse. And I think that's important. You know, so straight up, you know, we talk about empathy and we talk about horse welfare, but we've got to be thinking about it from the horse's point of view. And if you're not thinking about it from the horse's point of view and you're just all about me, 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 you know, we talked before about winning ribbons, but people yes. who keep winning ribbons, it's not about the ribbons. It's almost a bit, how can I get better myself? How can I improve this myself? So while the ribbon might be one of the products, it's not the only thing. You know, it is. Well, I should say. Well,
for some people, I think the ego gratification.
Yeah. Yes.
The need to feel superlative and significant and one up on someone. I am not driven to compete. That, and I certainly would not be driven to sacrifice my horse as a tool for my ribbon, because I certainly know the horse doesn't care about the ribbon. I would want the horse to look forward to not running away from me when I take the saddle off.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And I think that's, you know, a bit what I'm going for. If you want to compete, the competition, it's not all about the ribbon. And the ribbon and the trophy are just the icing on the cake. What you want is to get the communication, the bond, the everything else with your horse, and then the ribbon just becomes the icing on the cake. And if we can have a world where we can do that, that would be great.
You and I and people like us, Glennis, feel that way. I live 7 minutes from the World Equestrian Center, and I really can't enjoy going over there much of the time because there is so much ego gratification, neediness on the part of many owners who just need the ribbon. They need the significance among their peers. And they, I hope I'm not sounding too disparaging, but I see the horses suffering.
And I think this is something for our listeners too. You know, if you find yourself thinking that the ribbon's the only thing, think about when you first started, the joy that you had when you turned up every week for your lesson for your favourite horse, that, you know, just that initial joy you originally had, and if you can just keep that.
The horses give so much. They tolerate so much. The fact that they tolerate us on their backs and calibrating their own weight and trying to feel safe while balancing their own bodies with us. And I will never be much of a rider, and I'm so great. I can stay on anything. And I took up polo at age 75 because I wanted to learn something new, not rock 'em, sock 'em polo, but stay in your own lane, walk, trot, canter on a grass field kind. So, and I don't have fear, for which I'm really grateful, but I know that my horse feels in for me constantly. And it is such a thrill and a privilege to have a horse in your life.
Yes.
Such a privilege. But so many people use them and do not.
You know, this is something that I do ask. Because you would have been around a few professionals who work in the horse industry. What sort of core skills do you think they should have? You know, we're talking about core skills, you know, the character skills. What sort of characters do you think that, you know, looking on behalf of the horse, what sort of characters do you think a horse would want, the type of person to look after them, to care for them, to ride them, to train them, to do everything else? What do you think the horse would want?
If the horse had a want, which of course is anthropomorphic, we know. I remember one of my sisters is a psychiatrist, and when we were younger, we were talking about the golden rule, and I remember her saying, you know, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done unto you. She said, I don't think that should be the golden rule. The golden rule is do unto others as they would have done unto them, as they would wish be done unto them. So again, that's looking at things from the horse's point of view and understanding some basic things. I mean, it's your attitude. It's the seven keys to success that the Pirelli program always talked about. Attitude, knowledge, tools, techniques, time, imagination, and then support. A support of a community is a wonderful thing. If you have like-minded people to spend time with, that's a wonderful thing. And a horse, learning that a horse is a prey animal, not a predator. We are predators. Dogs are predators, so I was a good dog trainer. But dogs, they respond to praise and recognition, and horses do not. And the animal behaviorists say that the horse priorities are, Pat always said, safety, comfort, and play. The animal behaviorists say friends, forage, freedom, in that order. Friends, forage, freedom. And friends are safety, of course, safety of the herd. So I don't know if I answered your question, but the...
I think we're looking at, from a person's point of view, listening to a lot of different people, you know, because we have quite a few different people. So a question that I normally ask is, if you're working in the horse industry, what sort of people would you hire? Say, you know, you were looking and Pat said, you know, I've got these grooms, you know, that I'm looking just to work with the horses. Can you interview them for me? What sort of person, what sort of character traits would you have?
Well, you mentioned empathy earlier, but consideration of others, of course, glass half full, not glass half empty orientation, just positive. If I can't fix it, it ain't broke. Either I will find a way or I will make one. Jump in, showing initiative, not waiting to be told. Anticipating, people who anticipate and are respectful and confer, you know, not necessarily ask permission, but confer. But that, again, is incorporating the other person in the equation of whatever situation. So, yeah, just showing initiative. And
how can you find that out? You know, what sort of questions would you ask? How would you...
You know what? I can't tell you that I'm a good interviewer, but my friend Sharon Madair, who started a company and built it into in the pet products, dog-oriented industry. She had a product called the Gentle Leader Collar, which was very famous. And it's a multi-million dollar company, and she sold it and bought a beautiful farm here in Ocala, Florida. And I actually live on her farm right now. We are great friends. And my husband died. My resort community in Colorado was golf and equine, but the golfers edged the horses out, closed the stables, paved the trails, built more golf courses and more houses, and there are no horses there. And I thought, Art is dead, and I can't take my horse. I'm not going home. And I am on this mission. I want to touch as many horses as I can with what I know now about how to keep saddle equipment from being not so impactful. And in the case of our saddles, from being actually comfortable, the interface can help any saddle be better than it would be without what we've learned about the conforming pad and a shim in the right place. So I'm wondering. Oh, my friend Sharon Madera can tell you how to run an interview and find that out. And I'll get you a copy of her. She helped me interview Ryan, as a matter of fact, because... Okay. I didn't feel skill. I'm happy to admit when I'm when I need to add to my skill kit, and that was it. I said, I don't know that I can interview a person with the caliber that I would need to carry on our mission here, my personal mission, because I probably got a good decade left. I'll be 80 years old in a few weeks, and I probably have a good solid decade anyway. But it would be unrealistic to think that I didn't need help carrying this forth, because this is important stuff. It's really important stuff. Sharon helped me interview him, and she threw out some wonderful questions, and I can't remember all of them right now, but we would interview a lot of people. I'd be there with her, but she would generally run it and write it because she was so good. And then she kept coming to me and saying, I tell you what, if you were to croak tomorrow, I would hire this kid. This Ryan Fouts is the best we've interviewed. Well, I'll get you that list because there is a formula to it.
That would be good. And we'll put that up on the horse chats.
It includes self-assessment of strengths and weaknesses about yourself and sharing them. I'm sharing them as an employer, and conversing with the employee is a good thing to do.
Just going back to the saddles, Letitia, what sort of barriers did you have? Right. Now, we're not talking, you know, just about expanding, right? So, people, if you've got a new idea, say, no, that's not good, just because it's a new idea and it's different to theirs, just generally. You know, has there been any incidents where people have just poo-pooed the idea or just said, absolutely not, I'm not going to use that?
Constantly. My mission now that I know that our tools are as extraordinary as they are and as effective, my mission now is to help people understand how to recognize that they need to rethink saddle fit. They don't know their horses are suffering. They have tradition in their heads from friends and whatever. And to this day, you can go to YouTube and Google saddle fit, and you will see some of the same stuff that was parroted way back 20 years ago when we knew it was wrong. It's still being promoted today. You must mirror the angle of the horse's shoulder, for instance. Your saddle must fit the angle of your horse's shoulder.
That's when the horse is standing.
Many, many names. And the horse is saying, if you fit the angle of my shoulder while I'm standing, when I'm moving, it's a totally different set of shapes. I have nowhere to go. It's that simple. It seems so obvious to me now, but how do you get people's attention? People don't like to change their traditional views on things. They feel safe if they can hang on to their tradition. It's scary to take on new thinking.
I think I read somewhere that we've got 10,000 saddles, is that right?
Yeah, we've got at least 10,000 saddles out there and many more thousands using the interface. And that's why I renamed our company Contour Saddlery in the last couple of years, because originally we founded Natural Horseman Saddles, LLC. And then I realized along the way, some people think they don't like natural horsemanship. We also make Pirelli saddles. Some people think they don't like Pirelli. And I'm thinking, I know our equipment helps all horses. So I don't want people to put up barriers in their minds. So what's a generic umbrella name so that I can make Glenis saddles? I'm really proud to have some extraordinary horsemen who ride our saddles and recognize how superlative they are. Of course, the Pirellis are among them, but all of their instructors. And Ty Murray, do you know who Ty Murray is? Ty Murray, the bull, he was 9 times all-around champion cowboy. Some people say he's the finest cowboy to ever live. Bull ride. He started the Professional Bull Riding Association, the PBR, some of his friends. Anyway, he heard me give a talk once several years ago and called me from his tack room on FaceTime. It was a surprise call. He said, "All right, Leticia, this is Ty Murray. Will you look at this? I bet I've had a saddle made by every famous saddle maker there is. And ever since I heard you talk, it's stuck in my head that I know that these saddles are hurting my horses. I have never ridden without a dry spot. I know that my favorite horse is not happy. His head is nodding up with every stride. And you talk about the head should nod down with every stride." He said, I just can't get it out of my head. Can I test ride one of your saddles, please?" So he paid for us to ship one out. And I said, "You can, if you will have your wife hold the camera and let me FaceTime coach you about how to set it up, because you don't just slap it on. You need to have a shim at the scapular backswing point and just understand that as a concept. And it may seem like a pain in the neck in the beginning." So he was curious about it. And sure enough, he fell in love with it and bought the saddle. He sends me texts all the time saying, "Will you look at this guy's saddle? My saddle hasn't moved. I've been dragging cows all day. I've been in it, and the pad is wicking the perspiration down. It's almost dry. My horse's sweat marks are absolutely perfect. I just love this stuff." And I told my team, "We are not going to use his name because we can't afford to pay for an endorsement." And then one day he'd called me so many times. Yeah. And I said, "Hey, you know, Ty, this is the mission of my life. I want to reach more horses. You have 428,000 fans on your Facebook page." I said, "Can I brag about you yet?" And he said, "You bet. I have learned so much from you, and you can brag away."
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
It is wonderful. It is. And so, but the horses will tell you. They will tell you.
So just as a fault, so the main fault you see, I presume, is that people just don't know. They just don't know that it can be better for the horse.
Many people don't. The kind of person who doesn't care and who uses their horse as a tool for their own gain, prestige among their peers, that kind of person is a real struggle to even tolerate. But they're not the ones who are going to hear us.
Most people think, you know, and I understand that some people will say, you know, do whatever they need to for that ribbon, for that medal, for whatever. But people come into the horse industry, they start competing. with a certain love for the horse. You know, they have that yes. love. They want to get that connection. And that's the thing that we need to be able to hold on to and remind people of. You know, just remind people of their first interaction with horses. You know, what was it like for you when you first started riding? When you first started competing, when you weren't winning all the medals, when you weren't winning, you know, all the ribbons, what was it like then? You know, what was it like just going out, doing things, you know, and spending time with your horse? Keep reminding yeah. yourself what it is about the horse. Yeah.
And do you know how to recognize the signals, whether your horse is uncomfortable or unhappy?
Maybe you can talk about that. Just something to go home, and you know, because I like to give them a lesson. You know, they might be listening to this chat on their way to work, on their way to, you know, to their course, whatever. Something they can look for to see.
Okay, I've got something.
Yeah, please.
I've got something. Before you put your foot in the stirrup the next time, after you cinch up, reach in. If you're on the left side of your horse, reach with the flat of your left hand in under the saddle and pad along your horse's body, up along the bars of your saddle. If you can't get your hand in there, you need to relieve the space behind there by adding a shim. Just loosen your cinch and tuck a tapered foam shim. If you don't have one of those, fold a kitchen towel or something that would taper, but gives you some lifting power back behind the front of the saddle. If you do that, your horse can give you a whole new gear. It's best if you have one of our tapered foam, again, lots of research and experimentation. We've got just the right support and squish, and then you've got a lifting end and then a taper that flattens along the horse's body, so transitions nicely. Also, know where to set up your saddle on your horse's body. And after all of these thousands of horses we've worked with, we know if you feel for the bone of the scapula and make sure that the front concho of your Western saddle, the front one-third of it maybe, is over where your fingertips curl over, that will mean that you have about a hand's breadth of space between the horse's elbow and the front of the cinch. So it's not all the way up in his armpit against his leg. You need it set back, because the saddle being too far forward is one of the most common mistakes, and horses cannot travel well when their shoulders are impeded by that saddle.
All right, that's wonderful. Great things to take away. So if they want to contact you again.
Please. ContourSaddlery.com. And years ago, I designed a free saddle fit evaluation up in the top bar. And they can click on that and send it. If they're concerned about their saddle fit or have questions, we love to observe what we see. We need to see some pictures. We want to see a horse's profile. We want to see you tickle the belly. How high can the back lift? And good profile pictures, and it's explained on the free saddle fit evaluation, ContourSaddlery.com. And then some dimensions we might ask for if you're wondering whether your horse is a super wide or a traditional shape. If you're wondering, if you want to, in our country we ship to test ride. It's not as easy in Australia. We don't have a stock there, except that the Pirelli Center in Wilton has a few saddles. But there's nothing like a test ride. But at the very least, we can offer some advice. If you've got a horse with a compromised body, you might need more than just the shoulder shim that would help relieve pressure in the wrong place and add good connection to the saddle.
If people go to contoursaddlery.com, they'll be able to find that free download from there.
Right. And we're passionate about it. We'll get back to them. We're a small team. We'll get back with a drawing about where to put a shim for that horse's body, or so some suggestions that we see. And sometimes it's as simple as move your saddle back 3 or 4 inches or centimeters, whatever it is. For that horse, you'll find it'll be able to travel.
Look, that's great. Great to talk to you. And
I'm thrilled.
Sometimes. Thanks, Leticia.
Yes.
If you've enjoyed this chat, then please comment, rate and subscribe. If you'd like any changes or recommendations for guests, then please contact us through horsechats.com. And while you're online, have a look at the government accredited courses at internationalhorsecollege.com. Registered training organisation 31352.
Remember that our comments and instructions are general in nature and do not take into consideration your individual horses or your individual ability and circumstances. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please leave your comment below.